May I ask you some questions? The examples that you have given are statements which are neither false nor true. I think both of them, Francis Hexagonal and Lord,
Lord Ragdam on the Battle of Alma,
there are words in them which are too vague, very vague terms.
Well, now, which are the vague terms in Francis Hexagonal?
Hexagonal?
No, hexagonal is perfectly precise.
But if we take it as a quite precise term, the statement is false.
Are you sure? Or isn't it just a rough statement? I mean, what we mean by a rough statement is one which implies terms which are too precise to fit the facts exactly, and this is known, but that doesn't make it false, it makes it rough.
I think if you take this term to be a rough statement, I think hexagonal should be conceived not as a vague, not as a precise term, can't you say a rough term?
Now, what would it be in this vague sense? I understand hexagonal to mean having six sides.
But to have side means here straight sides. But it hasn't straight sides.
So you think it means here having six wiggly sides?
Six?
Wiggly, wobbly sides.
I don't...
Crooked sides.
Yes.
Are you sure of that?
Yes, I do. I am. I think that we should, we can give several meanings to the statement Francis hexagonal.
But why in the dictionary don't we find hexagonal defined as one, having six straight sides, two, having six wobbly sides?
The dictionary is not complete. I think we should write some words more in the dictionary.
Well.
But if you go to the language which the dictionary describes in a vague manner, we find that we must give some complete the dictionary.
Well, wait a minute. Is Francis hexagonal true or is it false?
I must know what you mean by hexagonal. Do you mean that France has six straight sides? If you mean that, it is wrong. It is false. Oh. If you mean that it has six sides which are not straight, then it may be.
What about the corners? How do I count the sides if the corners aren't sharp?
I don't remember the map, but I think it is there are something like corners there.
Well, something like in about four of the cases, yes. It's a quite serviceable statement. It's what the general wants to know. He says, what shape is France? And you say, hexagonal.
But if you mean that that is something something true, and you have given a vague meaning to the term hexagonal, vague in two respects, I think. First, with respect.
But you see, roughly speaking, if I say so, you're trying to explain this irritating phenomenon that I adduce, the phenomenon of roughness, in terms of what is, after all, an equally irritating and equally little understood phenomenon, that of vagueness. Now, in ordinary life, it's not in the least supposed that a rough statement is the same as a vague statement. They're quite different. And I don't see that there's any initial hopefulness in a program of explaining one in terms of the other. You like, as many philosophers do, vague, it seems to have a sort of philosophical cachet. Anyway, you want to get rid of rough. But why, in fact, shouldn't it be the case that roughness and vagueness are different? You see, why not say that the hexagonal has its ordinary meaning, having six straight sides, but the statement is rough in this sort of way that if you took actually any figure with six straight sides, it wouldn't fit France exactly, but only roughly. Why do we need to say, oh, but hexagonal actually? After all, if you're very eager about this, you will have to say that hexagonal, after all, France is a very peculiar shape with all sorts of wiggles and so on. If you're going to say that the meaning of our term, whatever it is, has to fit precisely the shape of France, hexagonal will have to take on a grotesquely precise special meaning for this case. But surely we don't need all this. All I need to know about hexagonal is what Euclid says hexagonal means, and then I can look at France with the information France is hexagonal and say roughly true. And I say it because if I can take the map of France, I mean that's all we can do by way of looking at France, look at the map of France, I can draw a six-sided figure which roughly fits it. Now this notion of roughly fitting, nothing to do with vagueness at all. It seems to me just distinct from it. Even if it were vague, you know, I should have had some considerable doubt about insisting that it was either true or false. I mean, if a person makes a statement which is genuinely vague, in ordinary life, we resist the decision whether it's true or false. We say, well, it's hopelessly vague. So that even if you showed that roughness was the same as vagueness, which seems to me would be a pity, I mean, pretending. Even if you did, why would you be prepared to assert that a vague statement must be true or false? Generally, we should say it isn't either, it's too vague.
I would like to ask you, first, is it possible, perhaps there are many ways of analyzing that statement, but certainly I'm sure that one possibility is to say that the term, one of the terms, hexagonal, is used vaguely. And what I mean by that is the following. One may use hexagonal in the meaning exactly hexagonal, that it has exactly six sides which are exactly straight. But often practical life, we generally use such a term in a vague way, that is, we mean that the sides are approximately straight, and approximately may be the variation within what is called approximately straight may be in one case greater, in another case smaller. I think that this is one possible way of describing this fact. But I don't say that it is the only way of describing it. And secondly, I want the reason why I want to make stress on this point is that it seems to be to me very very important that a statement is so analyzed, may be so analyzed, that the terms true and false can be applied on statements. As I think it is possible to apply one of those terms on statements, and I think it is possible to distinguish statements and other kinds of utterances which are performative in this way. It is always possible to analyze a statement in such a way that a statement is always either true or false. But in the same way, it is never possible to analyze an utterance so that it is something true or false. You said that a performative utterance is never true and false, but it often, perhaps always, implies something that is true and false. And in another part of your lecture, you said that you that in this lecture you only used imply in one manner.
In the second part, I was only using second, a special.
But word. Only a second. But certainly, you have used imply in another way in the first part.
Oh, quite vaguely. I think I said in some one or another sense of that vague word. That it was only in talking about the cat is on the map that I wished to use implies. In a special sense. No, in the first place, I'm speaking perfectly vague.
I think in the second part, when you spoke about the cat and the statement, and that the statement implies the belief in the statement, you mean by implication some habit, some regular.
Not that the statement implies a belief in the statement exactly, but that the making of the statement implies that the speaker believes it. I may have said that wrong. I'm probably correcting myself rather than you at that point. However, yes?
And when you say that the making of the statement implies, you have said about the same as always when I make a statement, I always when I make a real statement, I also believe in what I state.
Imply that I believe in it, yes.
I would like to analyze imply. What is implied? What does imply mean in this connection?
Well, I should give an account of it exactly the same as I gave of the sense in which saying, I promise to be there tomorrow, implies that I intend to be there tomorrow. Whatever sense of implies this is, it seems to me the same in both cases. Well, in the case of promising, I explained it in a rather fictional way by saying that the formula, I promise to be there tomorrow, is designed for use by persons having intentions consonant with what they say. And in a similar manner, statements, the statement form, is designed for people having beliefs consonant with the content of their statement. Well, this is put in a rather fictitious form about being designed for, and even using the slightly less objectionable way of putting it, that the procedure is abused. If somebody says, I promise, without having the intention, or makes the assertion without having the belief, you know, but in that slightly less objectionable form, it isn't really very good. Perhaps the simplest way of getting oneself to see it is to put it in yet a third way and say, after all, what's going to become of the formula of promising if people say, I promise to do so-and-so, without having intention of doing it? If that is permissible in some sense, or is regularly done, then the formula, I promise to do so-and-so, will lose all efficacy, will be stultified. And in exactly the same way, if we use the form of the statement regularly, without the speaker believing what is stated, or if in some sense it is permissible to use the statement form, without the speaker believing what is stated, then the act of stating, carrying with it a great deal of all the possibilities of communication, will be stultified, will break down. You can, or put another way, you can only state. There can only be such a thing as stating if, at least in general, people believe what they themselves state. There can only be such a thing as promising if, in general, people intend to do what they promise. It's very hard to set any limits to this in general, but it's perfectly easy to see the kind of self-stultification of the whole process, procedure and formula that arises if there is insincerity. That's the best I can do by way of explaining this. I think that we can see it all right if we...
Is it correct to say something like this? If I want to analyze what is said when I promise so and so. I not only said something about what is happening at the same point of time, but also something about what will probably or most certainly happen a little later.
No, I don't think I've said it.
No, you haven't said it.
If I haven't said, for example, that I have a certain intention or that I hold certain beliefs.
No.
But if I make the promise without having that intention or without having the beliefs, then there is abuse of the procedure, and if this happens regularly, the whole procedure will obviously break down, be stultified.
I didn't mean that the utterance I promise so and so that this contains some statement about what is going to happen. But when I speak about a promise, let's say that utterance is a promise, then I think I have not only said something about what happened at that point of time, but also something about what will most probably happen a little later.
Well, don't you think that in characterizing it as a promise, what you do say about the future, if you literally say anything about the future, is rather that if certain things don't happen in the future, there's going to be trouble. And if they do, there's going to be no trouble. It seems to me you don't actually, in saying somebody made a promise, you do not actually say that he is going to keep it. No. If you actually say anything, and I don't resist this idea, what you would be saying is, if he doesn't do it, then he'll be out of order. Not that he will do it, because we know quite well he may break it. And I don't think I'm saying he will probably keep it. If I say he made a promise, then whether or not we think he's likely to keep it depends on our view of him and the difficulties of keeping it. I mean, you can't in general say we're committed to any forecast of that kind.
I see that was not correct.
Can I just have one more go at you about statements being true or false? I don't want by this to be too nasty to statements. The only thing I have against them is I think that they get more than their share of the limelight. There are lots of things, even in very nearly in the same basket, which ought to have more attention. But I am rather against overplaying true and false. Let me put you a little conundrum to which I don't know the answer. I forget if I raised it with you two about kittenish, did I? A little problem about kittenish. Supposing I say of some lady's behavior on some occasion at some party or other, supposing I say, I ask you how, what did you think of her behavior? I mean, how did she behave? And I say, her behavior was kittenish. If you know what kittenish means. You're a little careful about translating it. It doesn't mean exactly like a kitten, but a kitten is a little cat. And kittenish is a way of behaving.
Cat.
A small cat.
Yes. Well, anyhow, supposing I say her behavior was kittenish. Let's suppose a lady of 40 or so, to make it more likely, as I say, her behavior was kittenish. No, let's not make her 40, let's make her, say, 25, because I don't wish to insist on any overtones of approval or disapproval in kittenish. I said, could you describe me, her behavior, as accurately as you can? And I say, yes, 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 well, the best word I can find for it, kittenish. I say, I wonder if it's literally true that her behavior was kittenish. In actual fact, was her behavior kittenish? You've asked you to describe it. Best you can do, you say, is kittenish. That seems to me to be a statement, a description. If it has any overtones of approval or disapproval, any normative overtones, let's wipe them out. We don't know whether you or I like kittenish behavior or don't in persons of whatever age is, whatever the circumstances are, we may approve. Supposing we address ourselves scientifically to the question, was her behavior kittenish or was it not? Is it true, literally, in actual fact, that her behavior was kittenish? Do you think that's sense?
I would like to answer in this manner. I would say that the utterance, linguistic moment is neither true or false literally, and only what we mean, what do we want to say by that linguistic phrase.
Oh. But you think it's vague, kittenish?
Perhaps. Yes, it's, of course, it's not a precise term. But the question is, it is difficult to find words for such qualities as the qualities
sure.
of behavior.
Yes, that's very much true, yes.
The question about truth and falsity is a question about properties, relations between what we mean when we make an utterance, and relation between that and reality. Has the man who says such a thing about the lady, does he express something that really that has he found some property about it, a quality about the lady's behavior that really belongs to the lady's behavior?
Now that's just what I'm asking. I mean, is it sense to attack this description in this sort of manner, as though we could objectively, literally decide whether it was kittenish or not? If we can't, which I think you're inclined to agree, why can't we? It is a statement, all right, isn't it? A descriptive statement. And I think you were saying quite rightly, that this is the very sort of word to use. There may be something nasty about this kind of word, but if I ask what is a behavior like, this is a quite useful sort of word in a rather difficult area, quite a useful word. So what's wrong with this statement, her behavior was kittenish? Why can't we answer the question whether it was literally true or in actual fact the case? You see, we certainly compare the statement with the facts. I mean, I say, well, I'd like to look through, did you take a film of the incident? I say, yes, well, I'd like to run through it several times, and so I do this. I mean, there is right on the blackboard, her behavior is kittenish. Next door, we run through this film of the incident. And then I say, well, might help if we had a few films of kittens at work, too. So we do this. I mean, go at it in a thoroughly factual way. And yet at the end, are we really going to be able to answer whether her behavior was in actual fact kittenish?
I think the difficulty here is know the meaning of to know what the man means, because the relation between word and meaning is not
Yet, after all, we shouldn't get much help. I mean, if I said to you, look here, we shall never decide this until we know what we mean by kittenish, shall we, O Sporter? Is it really likely that we disagree about kittenish? We'll both say, well, I mean, you've often seen kittens, you know the sort of way they carry on, and by kittenish we don't mean sticks her tail in our mouth because she hasn't got a tail. I mean, well, there are no doubts about this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with whiskers. But are we in disagreement about what kittenish means?
It is possible that a man means something that another person can, perhaps means by kiddish behavior, something that is not possible
Let's rule that out. If he means literally exactly like a kitten.
Yeah, something like a cat. A cat has the behavior of a cat has many properties. Or perhaps he sees one property, one quality of the behavior of a cat, and another person sees another quality, and so on. But I think the difficult thing is to know what the man means, and if many people know how the lady behaves, and once some people say that the lady behaves kittenishly.
Her behavior was kittenish.
Some others say that it was not. That's not a good description of her behavior. They may have seen different qualities of her behavior. Mm. But if we know what the man, what quality of the behavior that the man who says that she behaves like this, what he means, then we have a possibility of saying what if he has seen, if he has said something right or wrong, something false or true. But since the relation between word and meaning is very irregular, I think, in this area. We cannot. It is more important than usual to distinguish between the meaning of truth and falsity with regard to the linguistic expression on one side and the meaning of the expression on the other side. And it is also always. The meaning is the primary subject of the terms false and true.
However, suppose you see that they all agree, you're taking the case, and it would be one case, where two people are disagreeing about the application of this word kittenish to her behavior, and this could happen. But supposing this isn't so, I mean, we agree that it was kittenish, or we've both said it was, and then somebody asked us this question, but now, was it literally kittenish? Was it an actual fact kittenish? Aren't we a bit taken back by this, even though we both agreed it was kittenish?
That the behavior has some similarity with the behavior of a cat, but we have not said what quality. If we want to be very precise, we should say what property, what quality of the behavior of a cat is also a quality of the behavior of that.
But if we were to do that, we should certainly be altering the meaning and use of kittenish as it now is. Kittenish as it now is certainly not a precise word of this kind. So that it doesn't make sense of a word that in this way is not precise. That isn't the expression I should use, but it'll do. Not precise, it doesn't make much sense to ask whether a sentence containing it is precisely true.
What you are suggesting is, isn't it, that the word kittenish in one way or another covers a lot of different kinds of behavior, putting its tail in its mouth and so forth, and that we could in some way or another make an analysis of kittenish where by means of a disjunction. To be kittenish is to behave in this way, or this way, or this way, or this way, and so forth. And then we could distinguish several different, we could interpret kittenish in several different kinds, kittenish one, kittenish two, and so forth. And then we could say, when the man said, is her behavior kittenish? Then we could say, if you mean kittenish one, it's quite right. If it means kittenish two and so forth, it isn't right at all. Is that your idea?
About that, I think that always a word has many different meanings. When we study the meaning of a word in a certain instance of the word, we usually have only one of the of many, of an infinite number of continuously range of meaning, continuous range of meanings. And if we want to, but I think I don't think that when that a certain instance of a word has many meanings.
Well, but look, couldn't I? You see, of course, it's true that words, or most words, have in many senses of meaning many meanings. I don't dispute this, but I suggest, you see, that besides the question what was the meaning of the word on particular occasion of the use, certainly, besides the question of what was the meaning of the expression, there is also this question, just exactly how was it intended to bear upon the facts? You see, supposing I say of somebody's house, oh, it's miles away. Well, this is what we call an exaggeration. We don't want here so much to say that on such occasions as this, the word miles has a new meaning. As a matter of fact, in that case we might, because it's so commonly done. But supposing somebody makes supposing somebody says, oh, how many people were there? Millions or something. It's an exaggeration. Do we so much want to say that on this occasion millions has a true has a different meaning, and the statement was in fact literally true? Or shouldn't we rather say that on this occasion millions has much the same meaning as it usually has, just as hexagonal does in the case of France is hexagonal, but the nature of the occasion is such that we know he only intends this label to apply roughly to the thing he applies it to. I mean, isn't there scope for allowing for our wishing to apply the labels to the things only in different ways, roughly and so forth, as well as no doubt for saying that the labels on different occasions may mean different things? All I'm pleading for is that there are two considerations here, not just one. In the case of hexagonal, I'm perfectly convinced that the right answer is it has its ordinary meaning, but on this occasion, everybody knows it's only intended to apply roughly to the thing it's applied to. This is a possibility. And in many other cases, I mean, supposing it's an exaggeration, I don't want to say every time somebody uses a word in an exaggerated way that the word has a new meaning, but have a different way of putting this, that it has its usual meaning, and he's applying it in a case to which, in its usual meaning, the word does not literally apply, but applies by way of exaggeration, and we all know all about exaggeration, so it's all right. I mean, surely there are lots, there's a whole field here which is often overlooked about how, when we make descriptions and so on, how the labels, how tightly or loosely or roughly or generally or exaggeratedly and so on, they're meant to apply, how closely they're intended, in what way to fit the facts. And we shall, and this can be handled separately from the word having different meanings. You see, take exaggeration. I can't think of a good example. I don't want to use millions or miles, because these are so habitual that a dictionary might actually say miles, very great distance, or something like this. Supposing somebody makes a remark which is quite literally and straightly an exaggeration. Supposing that there were about 1,200 people there, and he says there were about 2,000 people there, says that. Or even possibly says there were 2,000 people there. And this is an exaggeration. Well, now, if we've agreed that it's an exaggeration, then we surely must be admitting what's obvious, that 2,000 means 2,000. And if it didn't mean what it usually means, the statement wouldn't be an exaggeration. But it is an exaggeration, and exaggeration is a genuine and regrettably common phenomenon. Now, in the case of exaggeration, we have to agree that the word is used with its ordinary meaning, but applied to the facts in a slightly skew way, which we fully understand, so much so that we make allowances for it. Well, this is similarly, as I say, with roughness and so on. We know perfectly well that it's being applied in some sort of a special skew manner or loose manner to the facts, and we have a whole array of words for this. Now, if we just have one little black and white set of words, true and false, for this question of how the description is related to the facts, we overlook all this. This is all I'm pleading. But besides multiplicity of meaning, we've got to study multiplicity of relations to the facts, indeed many of which are perfectly commonly recognized and made allowance for.
But if I say that there are 2,000 people in this room now, I have said something false, even if it is a very great exaggeration. But if it is an exaggeration in the meaning, which doesn't imply that I use the words in an unusual way, and I do not when I say, then I think.
Well, I don't think most people would agree, you see, that it's fair to say that all exaggerations are false. But if you think you would say that in the case of exaggeration, would you say it in the case of, let's say, somebody who made a remark that was rather rough, or perhaps rather inexact or imprecise? Supposing that he said that, you ask him what time he got home, and he said he got home at 2. Well, then it may transpire afterwards that he actually, as we say, got home at 1 minute past 2, or 5 minutes past 2, or 8 minutes past 2, or 10 minutes past 2. He says, when we ask him, he got home at 2. Now, are we going to be prepared to say, in each of the cases, 10 seconds past 2, 1 minute past 2, are we going to say in all these cases that his statement that he got home at 2 was false?
I should say that often by mean by 2, at 2 o'clock, is something in the vicinity of 2. This is the same case, I think, that as the case about hexagonal. Mm. But it is quite another thing to say that there are 2,000 people in this room. But if I say there are about 10 people in this room.
Well, but can you carry this very far? Supposing that you agree that, well, it would be all right often to say 2 when it meant, when actually the time was 2:05. Mm. Well, then supposing somebody says 2 when it was 2:06, mm. What are you going to say then? Does it suddenly become literally false if he is just a little bit too imprecise? Does it suddenly become literally false if he exaggerates just a tiny bit too much?
The question seems to me to be, what has he meant by 2? The range of vague, the marginal, I don't know.
The margin.
How great is it? How large is that margin?
And so in the case of hexagonal, the question would be, in addressing ourselves to this question, whether it's true or false that France is hexagonal, the answer would depend on how wobbly a hexagon could be in his meaning of hexagonal. I don't believe it. I don't believe there is any question that can really be answered whether this is literally true or false. I mean, we are perfectly content and have said all that needs saying when we say that it's a satisfactory rough description. But no more and no less. I mean, there are unsatisfactory rough descriptions. If I say France is rhomboidal, this won't do at all. But if I say it's hexagonal, as a rough description, pretty good. Serviceable. But there's no more to be asked if somebody is using... You see, I mean, it's like supposing I make a sketch map of a part of the countryside. It's no good pressing this too much as to accuracy and so forth. And so it isn't intended in that way. It's just intended to be a sketch map. And so, hexagonal. I mean, you don't want to say, supposing I make you a sketch or rough map of the country, you don't want to say something like this. Whether that is an accurate map depends upon the precise latitude of interpretation you, in making the sketch map, were giving to the lines and symbols. To say this kind of thing seems to me simply not to appreciate the nature of a sketch map or rough map. It's to treat it as though it were an accurate map, only the symbols were excessively hard to interpret. This can't be right.
But I think a map is always... all the grains of sand are not represented in the map. A map is always a scheme.
So is a description.
And so is the description.
So is the description. Yes. And therefore, it may be rough, like a rough map.
But that may mean that means that the meanings of the words has greater or smaller range of vagueness. That's a way of describing that thing. If what the description refers to has a property which falls within the range of vagueness of the term, then the description is true.
But now, why must we stick here to using one term, vagueness? Why not speak also of the range of roughness or the range of exaggeration possibility and so on? Why do you so strongly prefer one word, vague?
Because I wanted to be able to apply the words truth and falsity on the statements.
Yes, but can you? If you say that I came home at about 2, at 2 is a vague statement, it means about 2, but it's not laid down how many minutes and seconds before or after 2 you arrive, then there are a lot of cases where you don't know whether the statement I came home at 2 was true or not, since the conditions aren't laid down. And one of the things which Professor Austin says seems to me to be that in these cases the question of truth and falsehood doesn't arise.
Not taken very heavily anyhow. I mean, you can always use these as simply vague labels, but you can't press it in the way of literally, in actual fact and all this. Then you begin to see it isn't worth going on about at all.
What I don't understand is why we should make this sharp dichotomy between true and false statements. It has disadvantages, as Professor Austin has demonstrated, since it bars us from many questions. We can't ask many sensible questions if we always keep asking just this question. And I don't see just what fun we have by we can get from asking just whether it is literally true or literally false.
Supposing we take a description of a battle, say, not the one I gave there, but in general. Well, if we are asked to give our opinion of this description, let's say it's quite a short one, we shall give all sorts of terms of appraisal, but we needn't use at all the adjective true or false. It's very unlikely that we were asked to appraise it in general. Anything so crude would occur to us at all. We should use lots and lots of other terms, which we should say it's a little general, something like that. Supposing he gives a rather general description, or even your word, a rather vague description of the battle. So far from it being necessary to go on to ask, well, was it true or literally true as a description of the battle? It may actually make it fatuous to go on to ask. You see, if we say Lord Raglan won the Battle of Alma even, doesn't seem to be much sense in going on asking whether it was literally true that he won it or not. And in any, I say, in the case of a description of a battle, we should usually say it's too general, this kind of thing. In which case, that's the right way to put it. Or again, too vague. And if a description of something is too vague, that's it. You can't then ask, well, too vague or not, was it true or was it false? You see, if you assume that the only trouble about vagueness is this, that an expression has, on different occasions of its use, a large range of different definite meanings.
No, I don't mean...
rightly mean by vague is that on this particular occasion of its use, the meaning was vague.
Mm.
I think there is a case, you see, where we object to the term for being, say, ambiguous, on the ground that on different occasions it means one or another of several definite enough things. Mm. Only, on this occasion, it is not certain which of these array of definite things it means. That's one possibility.
Mm.
But the vague word precisely isn't like that. It's not a thing that has an array of different definite meanings, but something that has what's called vagueness. And having that, it is ex vi termini, ex vi termini, and there is no possibility of deciding whether it's true or false, literally. It's vague.
A person says that I came home at 2 o'clock in the night. What does it mean? That's one question. And another question, a person who hears that statement, how does he understand it? How does he normally understand it?
That's important.
I think if we could introspect the man, we would find what he means, range of variation he, how the boundaries of the vagueness in this case for him. Mm-hmm. And we might he said it is quite possible, at least, that he what he says is something that is what he says is something true. With if you give the statement the meaning that the grade of vagueness and the boundaries vagueness that he really gives it. If you know the boundaries for him, we may decide. I think we should. I understand what we should distinguish some different situations here. Perhaps.